Okay, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, I think episode 205. I can't quite remember. Deborah's not here yet. She is coming today, and we have a guest. I just wanted to do some business, get some stuff out of the way, and talk about something real quick before she gets here. Guys, we're Value for Value Production. I know we haven't been putting out that much content, but we have gotten some contributions from listeners in the past few weeks, and we just wanted to say thank you to all you guys for your generosity. Aaron, Chris, Selena, and Ben, thank you guys so much for your support. We really, really appreciate it. Other than that, guys, I don't know if anyone knows, but last Monday I did a show with Corey Hughes. He came on and we talked about Corey Hughes stuff, which is JFK and that one little country in the Middle East. And, you know, it was, we went for it. You know, we didn't hold back anything and, you know, had it out for a little bit. I think the last I looked, it had like 400 or 500 downloads. Not a ton, but I got spooked. When it comes down to it, guys, in all reality, my wife owns a business. I got to be a little bit more careful about speaking so openly about things like that. You know, if my wife's business got canceled because of something that I do on my tiny hobby show that gets 750 downloads per episode, it would be devastating. And I don't know if it'd be something we could come back from. Our way of life is dependent on her having a successful business. And, you know, it doesn't feel good to self-censor, but there's definitely stuff that can get you in trouble for talking about it. And yeah, I got spooked. I got a couple angry emails. Could have been from bots. Who knows? But yeah, so I took it down. My wife thanked me. She didn't tell me to. I did it on my own. Like I said, it doesn't feel great, but it's what I had to do. So hopefully you guys understand. If you have any, you know, everybody knows how I feel about that situation. So maybe we'll revisit it in the future in a little more guarded way, but it's always up there. We're always noticing things. And yeah. Just full transparency. Wanted to be honest with everybody. And, you know, if that changes your opinion of us in the show, I totally understand, because if people did that to shows that I listen to, maybe I'd be upset or you know, wouldn't want to support them anymore. But until I can have, I'm never going to have enough, the kind of money that it would take to speak openly. That openly as I would want to. So thanks for the support, guys. I'll be back in a minute with Deborah. Thanks, bye.
You are welcome.
Okay, guys, we're back. Deborah, you are here. What's going on?
I am here. Oh, just another normal day.
Yeah.
Just sun was out. Took the dog on a really nice long walk.
Cool. Sun is not out here.
I saw it had snow.
Yeah, we got a bunch of snow the other night, and now it's torrentially pouring. And we're supposed to get hammered with snow starting tomorrow afternoon. So we're going to prep for that in the morning, go get gas and stuff just in case the power goes out, and kind of just hang out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't been on in a while.
No, I haven't.
I don't think this is technically the first show of the new year.
That's correct.
I did release one show last week, but I got a little nervous and I took it down. So
why is that?
I think I flew a little too close to the sun, and we talked about, you know, that one country that should be unnamed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little spooked. You know, I just before you came on, I addressed everybody and told them about it, but you know, there's I gotta worry about Emily's business first and foremost, you know. So
well, consideration.
Yeah. But well, how was your holidays? How was your New Year's?
Nice and quiet, both of them. Both of them, they were sort of non, it was just like an any other day, which was just fine with me.
Did you make it to midnight?
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
Yeah, we weren't
No.
planning on it, and we went out, and Emily has to comb the hair of our big guardian dogs. She has to brush them, otherwise they get dreadlocks and it like hurts them. And while she was doing that, she found a tick behind Boris's ear, and so we were awake at midnight cutting a tick out of Bobo's ear.
Well, that's a way to ring in the new year.
Yeah, buddy's doing good now. So
Good.
yeah, it's been so like it's been such a mild winter so far, and it's been so like humid and wet
Yeah.
that I think the ticks are still out, even though it's far past tick season. I've never seen a tick on any of my dogs since we've been in Oregon, so.
Well, my dog keeps getting these little skin tags, little barnacles growing on him. And the first one that popped up, it was dark black, and he's a beige dog. So I thought for sure it was a tick. And I'm like trying to get it off, and it wasn't a tick. And so since then, he's had a few more of these barnacles, but he had one that came up on his upper lip, and it's black as can be. And I thought for sure it was a tick. And he happened to have one of his many dog doctor appointments that day, so I asked him, "Is that a tick?" And they said, "No."
Yeah,
So,
that's good. Hopefully it's nothing else concerning.
yeah, no, it's just, old dogs get barnacles.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions? None.
No.
You have any goals?
Yeah, I have a few goals. Be more present in my own body. And
What does that mean?
just allow myself to feel how I feel.
Got it.
Kind of nebulous, but yeah. I don't want to get to mid-January and feel like a failure because I didn't follow through on my.
Yeah.
You have resolutions?
My resolution was to get a purple belt in jiu-jitsu.
Yes,
And I got it last weekend, so I'm good for the year.
you're free to do whatever you want now.
Yeah, no, I just want to continue progressing as a homesteader, and I want to do jiu-jitsu 3 times a week every week, and I think those are attainable goals. And yeah, just get better at everything that I do.
Very
And
cool.
I think I'm well on our way. I had to I had to we had two big adult rams, Lambert and Leonard. Leonard's the big black and white one that's mean, who rammed me a couple weeks ago, so he's got to go. And then we had the other guy, Lambert, who was a nice guy, but he got real sick last winter and was losing a ton of weight. We took him to the vet, got him a bunch of medicine, nursed him back to health, and the same thing started happening this winter. So yesterday I put him down. It was a real bummer.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I feel better now that he's gone, because he was suffering. There wasn't even enough on him to try to salvage any meat or anything like that from him.
Poor
So,
guy. Is
yeah.
that something that you've heard of before or have?
I mean, just failure to thrive, I think, is pretty common in farm animals sometimes. And we kind of have this theory that we got him from another guy, this our friend Craig, and came from a different place, maybe wasn't used to our property, and
Yeah,
just didn't do well. He's got a
no
couple
telling.
kids. We let him get two of our girls pregnant, and so yeah, kind of a
Yeah.
bummer, but just had to
Yeah.
happen. Stuff you got to do. So I was nervous. I last time I had to last time I had to kill a sheep, I missed when I shot it, and I had to like chase it down and just cut its throat, and
Oh.
it was sucked. And this one
Yeah.
went as good as it could go.
Good.
So he knew. He let me do it. I put a rope around his neck to like a leash. I tied him to the fence and gave him a bunch of treats, and he was
No.
eating them. And then he like stopped. I was trying to get, situated where I was going to get a good shot. It's hard because they move, even though you're 2 inches away from them. You don't want to mess it up. And he got up, got a little spooked, looked at me. I told him it was going to be okay. He went back down and started eating and just like gave me the perfect angle.
Aww.
It's weird. The sun came out right
Yeah.
after it happened. Strange stuff. There's
Bizarre.
something out there, So,
Yeah.
and they
Did
know.
you, as a youngster, ever read The Yearling?
No.
Oh my God, it's about this family. I'll just give you the briefest. In like 1800s, I'm guessing, in rural, and they're farmers in Florida. And the little boy who's lonely, has no siblings, there's nobody else around, finds a yearling, a fawn that had been deserted. And so he brings it home and he begs his parents, can he have it as a pet because he's so lonely? They say yes. And when he gets to be full grown, he starts messing around with their crops. And so his father says, N not happening. You have got to take care of this. And the little boy who's like 8 or 9 has to shoot his beloved yearling.
That's kind of like Old Yeller also.
I don't ever remember seeing that movie. Did Old Yeller?
Yeah, they have to shoot Old Yeller at the end, I think. I couldn't shoot my dog, one of my dogs.
Oh my God,
I couldn't
no.
do it. So, I mean,
Yeah.
it's not any more inhumane than giving them an injection, but I just couldn't do it.
Well, I had a first with my dog Cubby today. He was really stinking up the room. And I figured, because I have smelt that foul smell before, I kind of figured what it was.
What was it?
And I'm anal glands.
Oh, yeah.
And so I took him in today. It's the first time I've ever had to do that with any of my
Were they like
animals.
all were they all engorged or whatever?
No, and
Infected. Wilma's used to get infected, so
I remember,
paid $2,500 to get them removed.
God, I remember that. Yeah, this only cost me 25, but I found a groomer that would do it. My vet's office was closed. And of course, as soon as I made the appointment, all odor disappeared. But I thought, okay, for $25, let's just go make sure. So,
Well, that's gross. Thanks for
yeah,
letting us know.
you're so welcome.
Yeah. You've been keeping up on any current events?
Oh, I watched some of the Republican debate last night.
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah,
Did
it was.
Vivek make Nikki Haley
No,
look stupid again?
he didn't make the cut. It was just her and DeSantis.
He didn't make the cut, huh?
No.
Crazy. Yeah, they can't have him anymore around.
Yeah.
Did you see when he just destroyed her on stage?
Yeah, he said something
When
about
he
her
said,
daughter.
no, not after that. When he
Oh.
was talking about the Ukraine war and how like she couldn't even name three provinces in eastern Ukraine.
Could
And
she? I
no,
mean, she.
she just stood, sat there like a dum-dum because she knows she couldn't.
And she was the UN ambassador. You'd think she might know
No,
some of that.
I don't think so. But yeah, have you seen these tunnels underneath these
The temples?
synagogues? Yeah, what's going on
Yeah.
there? Tunnels with dirty
I don't know.
mattresses on in them.
Yeah, and the it they say it's destabilizing the buildings around them.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't I'm off no agenda. They just I know I didn't want No Agenda to turn into my hate listen, and they had such terrible takes on a whole bunch of things recently that I was getting really angry at John C. Dvorak. He had such things to say as like, what did when Kissinger died, he made the point that Kissinger never did anything wrong. And then just the Israel-Palestine stuff he was just real, real bad on. But boomer, you know? And I think someone needs to do an early life check on John C. Dvorak. And I think that would probably explain a lot. So I stopped listening because I didn't want it to become a hate listen, and I wanted to leave it open for maybe someday going back to a listener of the show sent me a Telegram message that said, after I stopped listening, when the Epstein client list was going to come out, I guess John C. Dvorak said that it was of no importance. So, and that's probably because he knows a bunch of people on it. He's deep, deep in the Silicon Valley tech world. And there's this podcast called War Mode, and I like it. It's a good podcast. And they did this one episode on this thing called the I think called like the Edge Society, and it's some big NGO or type deal, but it's all the tech people. But it was heavily funded by Epstein. And John C. Dvorak, the co-host of No Agenda, was a part of it. So
Well, there you go. That explains
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But
So I saw the UN is gonna bring it to a vote that that Israel is conducting genocide.
yeah, I've heard some stuff about this. I haven't investigated at all, though. So what happens if they vote that they are?
I don't know.
They just say don't do that anymore, but they keep doing it, and we keep giving them all our money.
Or maybe they're booted out of the UN. I really don't know.
Yeah, right. Have you ever seen a list of the dual citizenship in our government?
No.
It's crazy. It's like 50%.
Any particular, I mean, is it widespread other countries, not the
No.
people, but it's all one
One
country?
country. Yes.
Is it the one that shall not be named?
Yes.
You're
2%
kidding.
of the population. That surprises you?
Well, I've never heard that before. It doesn't really, but that's.
Every one of them in the government that has a name like that, a Stein or a Berg name, has dual citizenship. Yeah.
Infiltrate much?
I mean, how is that not a conflict of interest? You know? I mean,
I'm surprised.
what if there's a whole bunch of, do you think it would be allowed if they were like Russian or Chinese dual citizens in our
N no,
government?
and you know the whole birther thing that, you know, if you're not born in this country, you cannot lead in this country.
No, but you can get a, if you're born here, you can get Israeli, so you could get an Israeli citizenship probably.
But you couldn't run for office.
If you're
I
born
mean,
here, yeah, you can.
no, if you were born elsewhere.
You can't be president, but you can be in other stuff. So, I mean, look at Arnold Schwarzenegger wasn't born here.
Yeah, but
And he
he
was your
wasn't
governor.
in.
He was your governor. Okay, our guest is here, Deborah. Let's pause.
Okay, all right.
Look into it. All right, guys, we're back. And today, our guest is Ken Silva. And Ken, you are a contributor to the Libertarian Institute and to Headline USA News. And your recent series called The Fed Files really knocks it out of the park, as far as what we're looking into right now. Welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah. What can you tell us, besides my poor intro there, what can you tell us about yourself?
So I've been a reporter for about 10 years about now. Started off around, college kid in 2008 as a Ron Paul guy, was more interested in economic theory, coming out of the financial crisis, got into, stuff about the Federal Reserve and, libertarianism. Really didn't get into these kind of deep state / parapolitical type of matters until, I guess, the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, when that hit the fan, it kind of, like so many other people, it kind of red-pilled me on a lot of stuff about the deep state. And I started working for a newspaper called the Epic Times. I had been all local before that. It was just a couple of years ago, started covering national news. And around that same time, I was reading a book that I know you discussed with Richard Booth called Aberration in the Heartland of the Real, just kind of this major biography on Timothy McVeigh. And I started searching some of the names mentioned in that book in the federal court system, just out of curiosity, seeing where these guys are today. And I came across an open lawsuit by Jesse Trenadu against the FBI and the CIA. And that was kind of the first major story I did about this 20-year and running, FOIA case where he's trying to get records about the Oklahoma City bombing, but some of his witnesses are being threatened by the FBI. It's like the only FOIA case to ever go to a trial. And I broke that story a year and a half ago, and I've been writing about these kind of topics ever since. It's kind of turned into my beat.
Yeah. Aberration is such a incredible book. I'm 10 pages away from being done with it, and I am almost a paranoid schizophrenic now.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's like I'm reading this book and trying to remember everything that's going on and like all the past circumstances and side stories and everything, and it's just I know how it feels to be a completely paranoid person now. It is insane.
Yeah, I remember highlighting, I had the book on Kindle and I ended up just like highlighting pretty much the whole book. Every single thing is just a jaw-dropping fact that I either hadn't heard before, or she puts it in a whole new context that really, it changes. Like I said before, it really changed how I think about, the government. And like I said, I've been a Ron Paul guy since 2008. So I think that's quite a statement to make.
Yeah. The thing, though, the most recent one that just was jaw-dropping for me out of that book was I read, do you remember the part where she talks about the actual executioner, the doctor who administered the lethal dose to him?
Yeah.
Deborah, this guy, he was like a doctor who had like his board certification. Like he was like, he wasn't able to work in a certain state, but he was able to go from Missouri to Indiana to do the execution. And then like when asked under oath, if he knew like what dosages he was supposed to give to people, he said he would just like eyeball it. And they asked him how he knew if it was working. And he said when after he'd given it to him, he could look through the blinds into the death chamber and see if like if it was working right. It's just insane.
Yeah, I like hearing Wendy tell that story because apparently they asked the doctor, like, do you take exact measurements of the chemicals you're shooting people with? And he goes, heavens, no. And I've heard Wendy say that about a half dozen times now. So every time I hear that, I hear it in Wendy's voice. The heavens, no.
Yeah, he said like he didn't have good enough eyesight to read medical vials or something like that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did he have good enough eyesight to read everything he needed to read to become a doctor?
Who knows? Strange stuff happens. But they said like maybe if you do the wrong dosage of the anesthetic, Deborah, like the sodium pentothal like makes your insides boil and it's extremely painful even if you can't see it on the face of the person. So pretty wild. Were you into the OKC stuff before Epstein, or Epstein brought you to there?
Yeah, I was familiar with some of the OKC stuff. I had listened to Scott Horton for over a decade, and he does, you know, a couple episodes every year. I remember reading about it as a kid, but it really got kind of swept under the rug after 9/11. My teenage years were, you know, the mid 2000s, and more everybody's talking about 9/11 by that point.
Got it. Yeah. So you were pretty young when OKC happened. OKC happened when I was 15, I think. So I can kind of remember it. And when Richard was on the show a couple of weeks ago, we kind of said it was the Gen X JFK.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. That's fair to say.
Yeah. Scott Horton was where I first heard Richard Booth. And yeah, so what can you let's see, we could get into the Fed files now. What made you go down that path? Besides, is it just a continuation of what you just talked about and looking up these names and figuring it out? The Fed files, Deborah, did you get a chance to read them?
Yes, I did.
And they kind of, you've got six parts so far. Is it still ongoing?
Yeah, I just published the latest one was actually what was the last week on a prominent libertarian turned Nazi who was also probably an FBI informant. And yeah, there's endless rabbit holes to go down. I've got at least one more story in the works right now.
That was the Chris Cantwell one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember I came into, you know, I heard Dave Smith on Joe Rogan back in like 2016. And that's kind of where I started waking up a little bit. And I remember at that time he was having Chris Cantwell on his show quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But Deborah, were you gonna ask something?
No, I was just Chris Cantwell was the fellow who was the informer in jail. Is that correct?
He was in jail briefly, but my series on the Fed files is based on hundreds of court records that I kind of stumbled across. And the source of those court records is a prison inmate. I think that might be what you're referring to.
Uh-huh.
Bill White is who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Bill White. Yeah. Yeah.
But didn't Cantwell get information from Bill White?
He offered him a deal to be an informant, according to Bill White.
According to Bill White. And we know the two were both in the same cell block. There's reports on, you know, like CNN about how it caused a controversy during Chris Cantwell's trial related to Charlottesville. Bill White was helping him with his legal filings. There's public reports about this. So we know the two had dealings with each other. And Bill came out in a court filing about 6 months ago saying that while they were in prison, Cantwell told him, hey, the feds will let you out earlier if you come work with me and start a, quote, fake Republican extremist group. I think we might be getting a little far, you know.
Yeah, Deborah's infamous for going out of order and jumping way ahead of starting at the start. So let's go back and start at the start.
Okay, sure. So you had asked me how I came across what I've dubbed the Fed files. And there was a Nazi rally down in Florida maybe 3 or 4 months ago. If you're on Twitter a lot, you probably saw these guys in like a red shirts with the black vests.
And that was the guy that had the whole face tattoo, right?
That's right. Yeah, one of them named Boneface.
And he had been like a part of Azov, apparently.
That was his story. It turns out that he was pretty much, he might have gone to Ukraine, but he definitely wasn't fighting in the war with Azov. But these guys caused a real stir on Twitter. I think they were harassing Laura Loomer, the conservative pundit who kind of showed up to film them. And I started looking into these guys, particularly this Boneface guy who endorsed Joe Biden and made the couple of news headlines because Biden is sending munitions to his brothers in Ukraine, or so that was his story. And when I was doing a deep dive on him, I saw that a prison inmate had filed a Freedom of Information request about Boneface from prison. I said, well, who's this guy doing a FOIA request on Boneface from prison? And it turns out this was Bill White. And so I looked Bill White up in the court system, and saw that he's been filing records that have never been reported on until I did, like for the last 6 or 7 years, describing basically, you know, a PatCon-like operation that was running from the early 2000s through Charlottesville. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners, the first question they have is like, well, why are you taking a prison inmate's, you know, word at face value? He could be accusing his former friends of being FBI informants for a number of reasons. Maybe he's just, you know, disgruntled. But the thing is, he's actually filed records to support many of his claims. The most significant finding that I've come across in his filings is that his former group, the National Socialist Movement, which is one of the oldest and largest Nazi groups in American history, well, that was co-founded by an FBI informant named Robert Brannon in the 1970s.
Was it kind of a continuation or the next generation of the George Lincoln Rockwell organization? What was the American Nazi Party?
That's exactly right. Robert Brannon was a direct disciple of George Lincoln Rockwell.
Who was also compromised, correct?
Yeah. So Rockwell, according to a buddy of mine, he used to brag how he would get money from the Jews, as he would put it. I think you're referring to groups like the ADL would actually fund Rockwell. That way they could publicize in the 60s and 70s, hey, there's a real Nazi problem. So, you know, donate to the ADL, donate to the SPLC. Let's get more government resources on these guys. Yeah. Rockwell was basically a useful idiot as far as I can tell.
Yeah, they need those groups need and their survival and their existence is based on needing an enemy.
I would agree with that for sure. And so Rockwell dies and his disciples kind of go off in various directions. One of them, Robert Brannon, co-founds the National Socialist Movement or NSM with another guy named Cliff Harrington, who bizarrely is married. I actually contacted him, to an avowed Satanist. That's kind of just like a weird little aside. But so you have the husband of a Satanist and an FBI informant start the National Socialist Movement. And so I'm not just taking Bill White's word for this. He actually filed an FBI 302 or an FBI report where the agents are discussing that our informant, his cover might have been compromised, but he has his own newsletter and he's issued a response. And so you got that one FBI memo saying, hey, our informant's compromised. But then Bill also found the newsletter that the FBI report is referring to. And the newsletter is from Robert Brannon, where they're saying, you know, all these other Nazis are attacking me. I'm not a Fed. In fact, the FBI visited my office for, you know, nefarious reasons a couple of weeks ago. These are lies. So yeah, you put two and two together. He pretty much proves that the NSM was co-founded by a Fed. And along with this being just a historical, you know, interesting fact, it's significant because the National Socialist Movement or NSM would be one of the major groups that participated in the 2017 Charlottesville rally, which I'm sure everybody knows that ended in violence with one of the guys ramming their car into a group of counter-protesters, killing a counter-protester, became the most politicized event of that time until January 6th. That was the event from which Trump said there were fine people on both sides. Oh, there were feds, you know, probably on both sides, but we know now for sure, definitely on the Nazi side.
Yeah, it's hard to remembering back to that time, like how much, I mean, I don't know if we're just used to it now or what, but there was so much tension in the air. And I, you know, I at that time I was living in the Bay Area, and it's always down there is always kind of a hotbed of you know, left-wing political movements. And yeah, it was, if you had any sort of right leanings down there at that time, you kept them to yourselves.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So what can you tell us about kind of about Bill White's history? I think you said it says in your articles that he started out as like a communist. What kind of communist was he? Was he like a punk rocker kind of anarchist communist guy, or what do you know about him?
Yeah, I think he was an anarcho-communist. And he probably, I don't know this for a fact, but he strayed into Nazism. There's, what is it called? Third positionism. Are you familiar with that term?
No.
It was basically in the Cold War, there were, you know, the Americans, the capitalist liberals, and there were the guys from World War II, the actual Nazis, and then there were the communists. And the Nazis started allying with the communists because they both hated the decadence of capitalism and they weren't fans of America. And so it's kind of like these Nazis who have gotten into communist ideology. And I think that's kind of where Bill White comes from.
Do you remember the name from the Aberration book, Johnny Bangerter?
Yeah, he was the head of security for the Aryan Nations at one point. Yeah,
he had kind of a similar story in the 80s. He was like a punk rocker, commie, anarchist guy, and then he became, you know, a big name in the white power movement.
Yeah, Bill White was never like a punk rocker guy. I think he was more of a nerdy guy.
Okay.
Who was like an internet edgelord.
Yeah.
He first made national headlines in the wake of the Columbine school shooting.
Okay.
He orchestrated a hoax where he claimed that he was involved with it and knew, you know, a bigger conspiracy and there's others involved. And it was actually picked up by major outlets. I think even like CNN actually reported on Bill White's hoax and ran with it. And Bill White claims that he thinks that this is when he first got on the government's radar, which we've been talking about McVeigh and Aberration and how, you know, in that book, McVeigh was like a computer hacker. And Wendy kind of suggests that he might have been on the Fed's radar from a teenager when he was a hacker. It looks like there's a similar story with Bill White here, you know, a punk teenager grabbing national headlines about Columbine. I think they might have started grooming him for some purposes all the way back in the late 90s. In any event, somehow he links up with the Russian government, starts working as a writer for Pravda.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into his backstory as far as that goes too much, but that is a confirmed fact that he did work for Pravda, and he claims that a foreign government had kind of used him to find who the other feds were in the Nazi movement, just to kind of throw monkey wrenches in what the U.S. government was trying to do. That I think he might be stretching that a little bit. But he does make that claim.
Yeah, I didn't even know that Pravda was a thing post communism, post Soviet Russia.
Yeah, I think it's still a publication today. I think you could go pravda.ru.
Wow.
It's still a thing, yeah. In any event, he starts consorting with Nazis. He joins this National Socialist Movement, the group that was co-founded by an FBI informant. And around 2004, 2005, another prominent white supremacist named Matthew Hale was in a legal dispute with another Nazi. And it was like a trademark dispute over, I think, like the National Socialist Movement logo, like real kind of silly stuff. But the judge ruled against Matthew Hale, and Matthew Hale allegedly solicited a hitman to murder the judge. The hitman turns out to be an FBI informant They arrest Matthew Hale, put him on trial in the Chicago area. While this is happening, Bill White finds the personal information of the jury foreman on Matthew Hale's case, who I believe was a gay black man. And Bill White publishes, doxes him. He publishes all the personal info on a Nazi website. And so the government charges him with like making threats and intimidating a juror. Even though he didn't tell anybody to do anything to this guy, he was just doxing him. So we're kind of blurring the lines of what's protected by the First Amendment and what is a legitimate threat. The government argued that it was a legitimate threat. Bill White gets convicted, gets sent to prison. This is around 2009, 2010 now. While he's in prison, he is tortured. And this is confirmed. He's filed records showing that he was tortured in prison around this time. He was let out in early 2009 after being placed in solitary confinement for like 40 straight days and freezing cold temperatures. The lights are on 24/7. He's not sleeping. They take him out of solitary. Eventually, his conviction's actually overturned. A district judge reviewed the case and determined that Bill White was protected by the First Amendment in publishing the jurors' information. So Bill White is allowed out of prison in 2010. But then the DOJ appeals that ruling, and an appeals court says, oh, actually, you're not protected by the First Amendment. You have to go back to prison. And at this point, we know Bill White, he's already been tortured. He's been let out. He doesn't want to go back because he just experienced, he went through hell. And you know, this guy's a Nazi, you know, kind of a scumbag, but these are the facts. He was tortured. He didn't want to go back to prison, so he absconds to Mexico. He's eventually caught in Mexico. They extradite him back to the U.S. They slap a bunch of additional charges on him, and now he's in prison until probably 2037 because of the whole issue of him being, a fugitive from the law, even though he was placed in those circumstances for, you know, dubious reasons. And it's been since around 2012 that he's been making all these extraordinary filings that underpin my Fed Files series. And so that's kind of his backstory in a nutshell. I will add one other weird detail. His dad was in the CIA. So that's another interesting thing about Bill White. But that's him in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's a crazy story so far. Do you think that he is a legitimate actor in all this? Do you think he was ever, not just approached by the feds? Do you think he ever did any undercover work for the federal government at all?
For the U.S. government?
Yeah.
The kids on the internet would say that he glows for sure. In the mid 2000s, he did things like he published one of the National Socialist Movement's newsletter with a picture of Obama, a noose, and it says, hang this N-word, with a question mark to kind of, so he could say, well, it's a question. Should we hang Obama? I'm not telling my readers to do it, but you would say that glows. That's definitely something an FBI informant would do to kind of provoke their idiot followers to actually maybe try to assassinate Obama. I've had another person who knew Bill White who accused him of being an FBI informant. I can't really get into that right now for confidentiality reasons. But yeah, there were questions. He might have been a Fed at one point, but I don't think he's a Fed. Like, I don't think he's putting out disinformation in court filings to benefit the FBI. Like, that makes no sense. He's been tortured on numerous occasions. He's in prison for decades. Like, he's no friend of the FBI right now. I can promise you that.
Yeah. Deborah, what are you? Go ahead.
Just thinking that he doxed the juror who, and the jury sided with him, correct?
No, the jury found him guilty, but then like the post conviction, you have a chance for the district judge to just throw out the conviction saying there's not evidence or this doesn't fit the law. And that's what the judge did after he was convicted, sent to prison. Then he was let out briefly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
These cases are so frustrating because it's like what Chuck Schumer said, you know, they've got seven ways from Sunday to screw you over if they want to. Article that Deborah alerted me to, and then I saw that you'd written on it, was the case of
Schaefer Cox.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, he was accused of just nothing. Got it thrown out or was declared innocent. And then just the federal government retries him and puts him in prison for like a long, long time.
Yeah, that's right. And the Schaefer Cox case, that's more reminiscent of like the Whitmer kidnapping case that has nothing to do with like Nazis, which is kind of my concentration. But yeah, that's another very dirty case where the FBI informant who helped entrap Schaefer Cox was also the head of security of a Senate candidate, a Tea Party Senate candidate from Alaska, who had a real good chance of actually winning and being a U.S. senator, but probably would have governed like Ron Paul. But this informant like roughs up a journalist during the campaign. It becomes a huge issue that totally tanks the candidate's candidacy. And so, yeah, this FBI informant is involved in a number of sketchy incidents.
Is he still in prison?
No, he got out.
Yeah, my article was about him being released to a halfway house. He would have been in prison until about 2040, but a judge eventually chopped off about 15 years or 10 years off of sentence because the whole case revolved around him allegedly trying to kill FBI agents, but there were no actual FBI agents. Like, there weren't any actual names or identities that he wanted to target. It was like very hypothetical. He thought the government was out to kill him, and he was talking about what he would do in defense, is pretty much my understanding of what happened there.
You know about a man by the name of Gordon Call, I think?
Oh, yeah.
That was an interesting story. Maybe you want to tell us about that.
Yeah, so this whole PatCon topic, I would contend, really kicks off with Gordon Call. And I think I could draw a relatively straight line from Gordon Call all the way to Charlottesville. Pretty much the same Nazi-fed movement. But yeah, Gordon Call, he was a farmer in North Dakota, or in the late 70s and early 80s, around the time of the farming crisis, where I think two or three farms in the Midwest were shutting down per day. Yeah. And Gordon, he's organizing all these farmers to say, hey, the federal government doesn't have your back. We should not pay income taxes.
And he was a World War II veteran.
And he had decorated multiple Bronze Stars, a real hero and a real man's man. He was probably a racist. You could argue he was a white supremacist, but he was.
Yeah, find me a World War II veteran that wasn't. My grandpa's in the same boat.
Exactly.
Good guy, though, you know.
When he wasn't farming in the summertime, he would go work in the oil fields in Texas, in what would be the winter in North Dakota. And he had black friends, he had immigrant friends. So, you know, he had his political beliefs, but he certainly wasn't anybody that was going to go out lynching people or anything like that. He was kind of a constitutionalist, a far right patriot, I would call him. And I would say he's a victim of the government because eventually the IRS targets him for refusing to file. He's sent to prison. There he has a couple heart attacks. He believes the government was responsible for that. Whether or not that's true, I can tell you he definitely believed that. And so he gets out He's still refusing to file his taxes, but this time he says, I'm not going back to jail. The IRS targets him again. The U.S. Marshals sets up this huge operation to take him down, again, just for refusing to file taxes. This is a paperwork issue.
And he didn't owe any money.
That's a very important point to add. But they still, it's not because he wasn't filing or paying. It's because he was a prominent public figure urging others to do so. So they wanted to take him out for political reasons. And so they set up a roadblock. This is early 1983 to try to take him down. Gordon sees the roadblock from about a mile away. He's with his son, his son's friend, his wife. They try to turn around, but there's some unmarked cars following him, and an armed standoff ensues. Somebody fires a gunshot eventually, and a shootout happens, and a couple marshals are killed. Gordon has claimed responsibility for killing all these people. He claimed it was out of self-defense, and he amazingly basically escapes, and he's on the lam for 3 or 4 months, and now he's becoming like a cult hero among the far right. Eventually, the FBI tracks him down in Arkansas, and a Waco type situation, or I've heard you talk about the order. It's similar to what happened to Bob Matthews.
Yeah, this one right here.
Yeah, the
Silent Brotherhood. Great book. They cover that in here. That what you're talking about is covered in here.
Oh yeah, the Gordon Call is meant. I think Bob Matthews cites Gordon Call. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ahead of myself because I'll get there. So
okay.
The FBI surrounds him. They've set his so-called safe house where he was on fire. It really looks like they mutilated his body on purpose. It really upsets the far right movement. In response to Gordon Call's killing, which is like, I think, April 83, a month later is the notorious Declaration of War, where all these Aryan Nations guys formally say that, you know, we're fighting a real war with the U.S. government. Bob Matthews splits off, starts the order. They're robbing banks and all that stuff that you discussed with Richard. But that was kind of sparked off by the murder of Gordon Call. Without that, I don't think the Aryan Nations guys would have taken it that seriously to the point of being willing to commit violence, but they thought that what happened to Gordon was going to happen to basically everybody. So that's kind of how Gordon ties into this whole, you know, PatCon type of topic.
Do you think that's the case where the whole right wing kind of militia patriot movement from the early 80s first came onto the federal government's radar?
Well, you know, there's isolated cases of, you know, KKK members, you know, being FBI informants, and they're, you know, killing civil rights protesters. But it turns out, you know, an FBI informant was involved in that. And some of those KKK guys kind of filtered in to what we'd call the 1980s Patriot movement. I believe they saw the farming crisis as an opportunity to recruit people like Gordon Call into more of like a white supremacist, or more, even if it has nothing to do with race, more of an ideology where you're willing to take up violence. I think the KKK guys kind of exploited that opportunity, if that answers your questions.
Yeah.
So that brings up the question, was Gordon Call just a way to incite violence so they could figure out who these white Aryan people were? I'm not saying that well.
Yeah, I know what you're saying though. Like, did the feds kill him on purpose
to provoke?
I think you probably can make the argument that Waco was on purpose to provoke right wingers. Gordon Call, I haven't seen any evidence of that. I think it might've just been overzealous people. The reason they set up the roadblock is they wanted to make a big high profile case. I think there was actually the U.S. Marshal in North Dakota had a good relationship with Gordon Call. And when he was replaced by some young buck who wanted to, you know, make a high profile arrest, I think it could have been something as simple as that. And then once Call kills two marshals, he's a marked man. And the FBI and the marshals, according to a local cop who wrote a book about Call, the book's called It's All About Power. The FBI agents and the marshals were in his office, like arguing about who gets to kill Gordon first. So I think it was more of like a personal beef, but nevertheless, the consequences are real. He became a martyr and inspired, you know, many, many people.
Well, that kind of reminds me of Waco, and Waco, from what I've heard, was supposed to be the ATF's make good after blowing Ruby Ridge so bad, and that didn't really work out with them. But the local sheriff in Waco said, like, if you wanted to arrest David Koresh, he goes jogging every morning on the road right by his house. I could have gone and he would have come willingly with me.
Yeah, that was the exact same situation for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my opinion, Deborah, yeah, it's always meant to provoke these people to create artificial violence that's becomes very real. And then that gives these agencies budgets and reasons to exist and all sorts of different things. So I guess moving on. So where can we, so do you think, I was kind of under the impression that the PatCon stuff started early to mid 90s, and you think it was a little bit, you think it was in the 80s?
I think the order, those bank robberies was organic right wing terrorism. And I think PatCon started shortly after the government took down the order, and they kind of bit off more than they could chew. They tried to arrest pretty much the entire Patriot movement for sedition. And when that case fell apart in 87, I think they launched PatCon as revenge. I think 87 was also the year that Andy Strassmeyer came from Germany to America, and he would be a key figure in the Oklahoma City bombing about, what, 8 years later. But throughout that time, he was widely suspected of being a provocateur. So I would put it around the late 80s. I mean, there were always FBI informants in this movement in the early and mid 80s. I just don't think it was like a concentrated effort until the late 80s, early 90s.
Got it. Yeah, and let's not forget Andy Strassmeyer. Not sure if he was dual citizen, but definitely had a relationship with that country in the Middle East, that little one.
The one that shall not be named.
Lived on a kibbutz there. You know, seems like a strange guy to come over and be involved in the white power movement at Elohim City.
But, indeed.
Hey, I guess one of the main things that I wanted to talk to you about on this show, we're constantly trying to wake Deborah up. She does a pretty good job, but recently we went on Mark Claire's show, and Mark asked Deborah if there's anything that she couldn't believe quite yet. And she said that she had seen no evidence that January 6th was not an insurrection. Can you draw a line from PatCon? You said you can get it into Charlottesville. Can you keep it going through into January 6th?
No, I cannot. That might be a point for Deborah. I do have questions about January 6th, but it is materially different from the cases I've been talking about, because these are mainstream Republicans who stormed the Capitol that day.
We'll remember what Bill White said that Chris Cantwell was trying to get him to recruit him for too.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And Chris Cantwell said he was trying to recruit him for a, like, what, a militant extremist Republican.
Yeah.
Republican. And I feel like the whole like racist, you know, militia guy thing has kind of given way. And the term Republican can also almost all just be meant when used by certain people on different sides to mean what you know, racist militia used to mean.
Now, yeah, now it can. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, so through the 80s, most of those guys were hardcore World War II or Vietnam veterans who had their own culture that was entirely separate from the GOP. And in the 90s, those guys start to get old and retire, and they're kind of replaced with criminal skinheads. And that was what the Nazi movement basically became. And these political movements are ripe for infiltration because there's so many criminals involved. These skinheads, they get arrested, you know, at age 18 or 19 for drugs or, you know, whatever. And the FBI flips them into informants. And then
yeah, a lot of times if you're an 18-year-old racist skinhead, it's because you came from a bad home. You got involved in, you know, drugs and gang life and stuff like that. And you don't really have a real ideology around it, you know, so you'd be easy to flip because you don't have, you know, you get put in a bad spot. You don't really have any allegiance to anything.
Absolutely. But that's not what most of the January 6th Capitol stormers were. Voters with day jobs, mostly had their shit together. Most of them weren't prior, you know, don't have any prior criminal records. And so the FBI would have a little bit more difficult time to infiltrate those groups with key, you know, criminal informants. Although, you know, a lot of this stuff can happen on the internet now. And the other main distinction is that January 6th is that, you know, the 1,000+ defendants, I don't think any of them should really be facing charges unless you committed serious violence on that day. I'll do that caveat. I do think the justice.
Dude, those windows broke, man. That was terrifying.
Well, you know, a couple cops got hit. I mean, nobody got murdered that day from the government side. There were not much serious activity happened, but maybe if you punched a cop, yeah, you can go to jail for a year or something like that. I don't think what's happened to the vast majority of the defendants is warranted. However, they do have human volition. It's hard to claim entrapment when you're openly saying, yeah, the election's stolen. We got to, you know, storm the Capitol. Is like a lot of these people had that choice, which that is materially different in my mind than a case like the Whitmer kidnapping case, where it's informants who are, you know, you're just running your mouth over a couple beers and a campfire at night, and they use selective quotes to make you seem like you really want to kidnap the governor. January 6th is a little bit more like people actually did knowingly commit crimes, even though the crimes in my mind aren't serious. I think there are questions about whether it was some kind of color revolution, like what happened in Ukraine in 2014, where you have a couple key provocateurs who kind of get the whole crowd to do something. I'm open to that possibility.
Do you think they were trying to stir it up bigger than what actually happened, and that they thought people might actually be armed and go in there and do some real damage?
I do think that's definitely the case. And I think the most damning thing,
I mean,
is
one guy had zip ties, so that's pretty terrifying.
Oh yeah. Be careful. But even liberals who really research this, the smart ones who've done a lot of good work on January 6th, agree with the right wingers that the FBI and the U.S. government basically knew something bad was going to happen and they let it happen. Now, the liberals will argue that, Christopher Wray was buddies with Trump. Trump appointed Wray, and the FBI actually supported the coup effort, which I totally disagree with that, because you just got to ask yourself, like, who has benefited from January 6th? It's the Democrats. The Republicans have all been basically destroyed from January 6th. So many lives have been destroyed. So clearly the U.S. government knew it was going to happen. They allowed it to happen. And so that's highly suspicious. But still, you got to look. Everybody has, you know, individual free will, and they get to choose whether or not they're going to trespass or go inside the building. So I think it's a little bit different from some of the other PatCon type cases.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good, fair assessment, unbiased. These guys definitely did some dumb stuff, but you know, the dumb stuff doesn't, in my opinion, warrant, you know, 17 years in prison. You know, that's just.
Did I see that Ray Epps got probation?
I think he got a year, 12 months or something like that.
And community service.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am in the camp that believes Ray Epps is some kind of agent provocateur, whether he was a contractor or an actual undercover informant. I do believe that. But again, you know, there's a handful of guys like Ray Epps, but you're still there. You have the choice of whether you're going to listen to him telling you to break the law or not. And, you know, people made their choices accordingly.
How prevalent do you think federal informants, undercover agents, and things like that are in, you know, everyday life and just like in different groups and, I got roped into to joining some weird meetings and stuff during the lockdowns, just out of, you know, desperation and fear. And I was scared on the other side of the thing and did a bunch of dumb stuff, bought things I didn't need, prepped and did all that stuff, which I'm, you know, isn't a terrible idea, but I definitely took it too far. And I'm definitely think that I was probably in the midst of some federal informants and people that were compromised. How prevalent do you think it is? And, you know, on what level of like group meetings do you think that they would be in an area? Does that make sense? Sorry.
It's hard to quantify that. I think there's like something like 45,000 registered informants that the FBI has. I think Trevor Aronson, who wrote The Terror Factory, which is about Muslim entrapment, he came up with those figures. And I think he said there's a bunch of unregistered informants who, you know, they'll talk to the FBI, but they might not actually be in the system. So, you know, we have tens of thousands of these guys. It's highly, highly prevalent. And if you're a Republican now, I think you can safely assume that whatever, if you're in some kind of group, like a Moms for Liberty type thing, where you go into school board meetings to protest child pornography or mask mandates, you're definitely probably interacting with the Fed here and there.
Anything with Patriot or Freedom in the title of the group, there's somebody there probably. Yeah, I got involved in, are you familiar with John Bush and like Freedom Cells?
Not too much, no.
John Bush, he's a libertarian guy, and he does this thing called Freedom Cells, where it was just like, you know, you go and you meet up with people and you know, try to create like parallel societies and stuff like that. But yeah, I went to that in Portland, and I remember one hippie guy was saying like, you guys need to watch what you're saying here. Cause his statistic that he knew was like, if there's 12 for every 12 people, there's probably a Fed in there.
That sounds right. In the Whitmer kidnapping case, there were, I think, 12 defendants and then 14 undercover informants or agents. So in that case, the ratio was like 50-50. Half of them were feds, half of them were, you know, normal.
Retarded.
Guys.
Yeah.
Retarded. Yeah.
Yeah. They go after autistics and retards and also like, it's not good. Yeah. I've never read The Terror Factory, but I've always heard about it. So I might check that out.
To your question though, when you ask how prevalent it is now, Republicans need to be very wary. There was a Newsweek article from maybe a month ago that talked about the FBI's plan coming for 2024. And there's a quote from the FBI, the author writes it. He doesn't attribute it, but he said the FBI is considering like controversial, like COINTELPRO type tactics coming up this year. I'll have to send you the article because that quote, I'm like, whoa.
Who quoted that?
Newsweek. This is a Newsweek story where they said that the FBI.
That's a CIA rag too. So
it's very interesting though that they admitted that they're going to be infiltrating MAGA groups and possibly doing controversial illegal things. That was like almost verbatim of what Newsweek reported, all in the name of, I guess, fortifying the upcoming.
Yeah.
Then I have no idea.
Yeah. Do you, well, to be fair, let's ask about the other side. Do you think that there's infiltration and informants and things like that on the other side, as far as like Antifa and stuff like that goes? Or I know there's probably feds in there, but doing stuff on purpose that they're not going to get people in trouble for, but just maybe to provoke the other side?
Yeah, I most definitely do. There's a couple different directions I could go with that. One of them is one of Bill White's disclosures was that, and this is confirmed in other books, that, you know, the FBI, if they know that the Nazis are going to hold a rally, they'll purposely let Antifa, or back in the 90s, it was called anti-racist.
Yeah, action. ARA. Yeah, there was a bunch of like communist sharp skinhead groups that were involved in that and stuff like that. So
yeah, they'll throw those guys together to kind of like a powder keg to hope something happens, hope they fight each other. So the FBI definitely is obviously passing this information to somebody, probably a Fed. More recently, the stories I broke last year that I'm most proud of is that an undercover agent named Red in the Whitmer case was also involved in a Black Lives Matter protest that same summer of 2020, where he was trying to get them to assassinate Colorado's attorney general as Special Agents Timothy Bates. I talked to defendants in both cases. It's like the same height, same black and white tattoo sleeve, same.
He was doing that on the side of Black Lives Matter, trying to get Black Lives Matter protesters to assassinate.
Yeah. So Trevor Aronson, the Terror Factory author, did a podcast last year called Alphabet Boys, which was about how the FBI infiltrated Black Lives Matter and tried to provoke them to violence in the summer of 2020. And while I'm listening to that, he's talking about this guy named FBI Agent Red, who met with some of the protesters, and they're driving around casing the attorney general's house. And he's saying, well, how much money do you have? $400. Yeah, I think we could find a hitman for $400. The BLM guys, obviously, that's like so suspicious that they're like, okay, this guy's weird. The plot never moved forward. Obviously, there was no arrests made for a conspiracy to assassinate. But that was July 2020. The very next month, he goes from Colorado to Michigan, and now he's consorting with all the militia guys trying to get them to kidnap the governor. So yeah, I don't think I can answer your question any better than that. I mean, it's like the same people are controlling both sides. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a woman, I forget her name. I heard her on a couple podcasts. I heard her just recently on Nick Bryant's podcast, and she's coming out with a documentary about the Whitmer kidnapping case. I reached out to her, actually emailed back and forth with her. I think I'm going to get her to come on the show. So are you familiar with that case at all, Deborah?
Gretchen Whitmer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The attempt to kidnap her.
Yeah.
But I don't know any details.
Yeah. Yeah. Something, the amount of, there was what, 14 guys and something like, you said like half were some sort of informant or federal agent.
Yeah. It was like 14 and 14. There were 14 defendants and I think 12. Yeah. 12 informants and 3 undercover agents. So the number of feds actually outnumbered the defendants in that case. It's
yeah. These guys crazy. were like borderline homeless. One guy was like a disabled Vietnam veteran who was like riding around in a Rascal and like just stuff like that. It's crazy. And they'd like, all these guys had never even met each other in person. They were just like Facebook friends. It's no good.
Yeah. And that's Christina Urso is the documentarian, by the way.
Yeah.
She's great. I talk to her all the time. She's actually given me some records that gave me a couple good scoops about the Whitmer case. So definitely support her.
Cool. Yeah. I'm going to reach out to her, send her another email tonight, put in the good word for us if you get a chance.
Oh yeah. I can do that for sure.
We've had you for about an hour, Ken. Deborah, do you have any final thoughts or questions?
Well, I am still going to wait and find that link between Charlottesville and January 6th, but I'll be patient.
Yeah. There may not be a link between the two, but that doesn't mean that there was that the whole January 6th was a organic grassroots effort, you know. So
Yeah, and there's no link between like Charlottesville and the Whitmer case have nothing to do with each other. Whitmer is like the guys in the Whitmer case were not Nazis. They were not even racist. I think they actually attended some BLM protests in 2020 in support of who was that girl that was killed by the cops down in Kentucky? I forget which one was. Oh,
Breonna Taylor.
So yeah, the Michigan guys, the militia guys supported Breonna Taylor. Like they're in the taxonomy of the right wing. The militias in Michigan were totally separate from like the feds, the Fed Nazis. So there's no link there, but they're clearly entrapment in both cases. So just because there's not direct links between Charlottesville and January 6th doesn't mean that the latter isn't some kind of sketchy, I wouldn't call it really entrapment, but it's borderline. There's a lot of very suspicious things that would probably take another hour to really unpack.
Yeah. Well, we're in a election year officially now. What do you have on your bingo card for the next 11 months, Ken?
Oh man. That's I mean, what has happened already this year? You've got like
we've got mattresses, shit-covered mattresses coming out of tunnels and under synagogues. What else we got?
Yeah, you've got I'm glad you said it and not me, but so I can't even predict what's possibly going to happen. It's going to be something. There will be a terrorist case for sure. That's highly political. And
you think we're getting white nationalism terrorism, or you think we're replaying back into radical Islam, or both?
That's a really good question, because on the one hand, if you do radical Muslim terrorism, then you get the Republicans off your back who are trying to defund the FBI. On the other hand, Biden, it's in Biden's interest to play up the threat of white nationalism. You know, he claims that Charlottesville was his old impetus for running in the first place, which is a lie, but you know, that's his narrative. And I'll go back to that Newsweek article. I wish I had the exact quote, but they said they're infiltrating MAGA groups currently and that they're doing borderline illegal activities. So I would keep an eye on that for sure. I think there's going to be some probably people shooting substations or weird stuff like that. Hopefully not too many people get hurt.
Yeah, that's Order of Nine Angles stuff. William Ramsey right there. But yeah. Definitely keep your head on a swivel, guys. Don't join any groups. I've done it. I don't know. You go to, I remember my wife and I, we moved out to the woods from, we lived right by Portland. We got out in 2021. And on all the little, we live like on a gravel road out in the middle of nowhere. And there was like some signs up on the telephone poles by our house for like the, it was, you know, during lockdown still in Oregon, which was bad. Wasn't where we lived, but it was still a thing. And there was, I forget what it was called. It was like Patriots for Freedom or something. And it was like, you went up to the next local little tiny town and it was in a church and I walked in. We just were like, we don't know anybody out here. Maybe we can, you know, at least like make some contacts or something. And we went in and it was like a full on Q meeting. They handed me like a I forget which amendment out of the Constitution they handed me, and then it was, and then there was like a guy in there like filming it with his phone. I was like, whoa, dude, don't film me, you know. We cut out pretty quick after that. We didn't go back.
Interesting. I would like to actually go to one of those things just to see what it's like, to be honest.
Yeah, it was not the best and the brightest. You know, it was a. Yeah, it was definitely like Q people who had just like woken up to some Q stuff that was, you know, 75% real mixed with a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, muddies the waters.
Hey, I know you're winding down here, but you kind of jogged my memory.
Keep going then.
The connection between Charlottesville and January 6th could arguably be this Order of the Nine Angles.
Yeah, ONA.
I looked because I saw it in your papers, and I tried to Google
Are you familiar with William Ramsey, Ken?
Yeah,
he's done like 1,000 shows on it, written a book on it. He came on our show, Deborah, and talked to us about it. So
okay, don't remember that, sorry.
But yeah, they're the ones that were kind of they're related to Adam Waffen, who was a white power group out of Florida, and then they had this thing called, I think, the Base in Washington.
Yep.
It's funny because I go to a jiu-jitsu school in Washington called the Base. But yeah, they're the ones that, you know, a couple members of that took credit, of Adam Waffen took credit for those substation bombings or whatever that happened in the middle of last year. But they subscribe to this weird kind of satanic occult practice called the Order of Nine Angles. And it's a weird kind of crossover.
Yeah, there's a weird Nazi Satanist subculture. But the O9A, a lot of people in those kind of chat rooms were involved in Charlottesville. So we know the O9A was very much linked to Charlottesville. And there is some evidence that suggests that they might have been involved in the pipe bomb scares, where somebody planted a pipe bomb outside of the DNC and RNC the night before January 6th. I think the official narrative is like, if the pipe bombs actually went off, law enforcement would have been diverted there, and all the Capitol stormers could have actually succeeded in their, you know, so-called coup or insurrection. So I did a story about a counterterrorism researcher who holds a security clearance, used to work for the Pentagon in fighting ISIS. And she came out last year, or maybe 18 months ago or so, and claimed to have identified the pipe bomber. And then she like disappeared a month or two later. Her name's Jade Parker, highly, highly credible researcher who was actually at the forefront of explaining the accelerationist threat and really breaking down groups like Order of the Nine Angles. And I have reason to believe that Jade Parker believed that O9A was involved in this fake pipe bomb scare. If you guys want to read more about that, yeah, look up Jade Parker. I think the headline of my article was "Counterterrorism Operator Vanishes After Claiming to Identify the Pipe Bomber." That's on Headline USA. And so that would be the most, I guess, conspicuous link between this actual, you know, Nazi Fed movement and more mainstream Republican politics.
And did I read somewhere that the stuff that you put in the bomb, was stuff that usually the FBI, the undercover FBI agents would use?
Yeah, it was totally inert. The bombs never were in any danger of actually detonating. And usually the feds will, for these kind of sting operations, they'll give their perps fake explosives for all the obvious reasons. So, you know, it doesn't actually accidentally go off and kill 168 people outside of a federal building or something like that.
Yeah. Didn't they give somebody a real, well, besides Tim McVeigh, didn't they give somebody a real bomb one time? Oh, I can't.
I don't know, but the Aryan Republican Army would use pipe bombs. They would rob a bank and then leave a pipe bomb behind as they made their escape. That way, law enforcement has to concentrate on the bomb. And all those bombs were totally inert. And one of the robbers still in prison actually did a court filing maybe 2 years ago trying to get sent years chopped off his sentence because he's claiming the bombs were totally fake. And I think that lends credence to the idea that the Aryan Republican Army was also some kind of weird federal operation.
It's funny that you use the terminology chopped off, because there is a member of the ARA who is trans now and like led some like LGBTQ prisoner group against Trump or something during the last election.
Yeah, the first, that's Pete Langan.
Yeah.
now goes by Donna because the first inmate in history to get a taxpayer-funded sex change. I had the privilege of breaking that story. But so that Langan is actually a very smart person, I believe is legitimately trans because he was like raped a bunch of times as a teenager in prison. I think had real sexual identity, you know, confusion. Yeah. Very interesting and smart person, though. Another son of a CIA agent. But that's Langan's the one that claims that the pipe bombs were totally inert.
Got it. Do you have anything that you would say if you want to go deeper into this stuff besides reading your articles? But as far as books go, what's some 101 stuff besides Aberration, Silent Brotherhood? What else would you recommend?
On this topic, well, the Gordon Call book is called It's All About Power. There's a book written by a mainstream journalist called Bitter Harvest that has some factual inaccuracies, but it's actually a really entertaining read. I'd rank it up there with Silent Brotherhood as just as far as page turners go. If people are interested in the 80s era, along with the Call books, there's a book called Committee of the States. I'm trying to think of more recent stuff. I guess the book needs to be written. And maybe I'll try to do that in the coming years. Might title it Patriot Conspiracy. I think that might be a good
term. That'd be awesome. We know, I think Dr. Wendy Painting is coming out with something new sometime soon. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know about sometime soon.
But she's working on it.
Goes deep, yeah, but she is working on book number two. I think her working title is called Redacted, just in reference to all the records that we get are almost entirely all blacked out.
Yeah, I just saw on Twitter, I think yesterday, she had posted a picture that she's like sitting in a room with 25 file boxes that have never been looked over by anybody before, or something, 25 or 75. So it's funny. Yeah, she's I love listening to her talk. Her 11-part series on Program to Chill is really, really good. I mean, I've heard her talk about Ghostbusters on podcasts for like 12 hours, like for real 12 hours on Program to Chill. It's crazy. She's has a severe attention to detail.
Yeah, sure.
But I think that's a good jumping off spot and a ton of stuff for us to look into. We're really looking forward to seeing more stuff in the Fed Files series. And we really appreciate you coming on, Ken. It means a lot to us. Do you want to tell everybody how they can support you? And I'll put all your links and stuff in the show notes.
You could just follow me on Twitter at JD_cashless. That's a reference to the journalist J.D. Cash, who broke most of the major revelations about the OKC bombing. And HeadlineUSA.com, the Libertarian Institute. And thank you guys for the interest. I'm always flattered when people actually read my articles. Like, so few people read, let alone reading about these kind of obscure, but I think deeply interesting cases if you actually get into them.
Yeah. And this one, OKC, they're important right now because people are still relatively young and alive that can still like maybe get stuff done. So who knows? Right. But open invite. We'd love to have you back whenever you want to come on. And let's talk again soon. Thank you so much, Ken.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Anytime.
See you guys.
Great.
Bye.
All right.
Bye. Okay.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks! And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell! Every damn one of you's a piece of crap! And you're gonna be judged, so you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots, because you will be destroyed!
Mom, I'm transgender.